In your seat, test complete. Don't be had, don't be sad and blue. Make sure you're up to speed. Yeah, you're up to speed with tools shiny and new. Woo! Here on Tools Day.
Nice.
Maybe coding for the very first time, like a newbie. You've got your content ready for Tools Day time. Welcome to Tools Day, a podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we've got Colby Williams, aka Colby Cheese, on the show.
Yo, what's up, guys? How's it going?
And we're going to be talking about testing tools. JavaScript testing tools.
Yes,
unit testing tools. Super, super excited to have you on the show, Colby. Thanks for stopping by.
I'm excited to be on the show. I was like, I think the first time I saw you in this room, I was like, hey, I'll come to your show.
This was a long time ago. 3 months ago. And now it's happening.
Yeah, this is our 16th episode.
This is
maybe our fifth month doing it because we've had a couple breaks in between.
Yeah, we started in October.
Yeah.
We're going strong. I'm so proud of us.
Yeah, high five.
Yes, doing this thing.
Well done. Nice.
I'm so excited about this show because I don't really know that much about unit testing. I have to run tests. I've written a test or two, but, teach me some more things. I'm really excited to hear.
But first, who are you?
Who are you, Colby Williams?
Okay.
Colby Cheese?
Colby Cheese. Yes.
Why are you called Colby Cheese?
Why? Oh, really? Do you want the origin story?
I feel like that's an important part of who you are.
I got called Colby Cheese like from my first job because it was a call center. I used to answer the phone and people would never get my name right. They're like, Cody or Colby, like the basketball player? And I was like, no, it's Colby,
just
like
call
the
me
cheese.
Mr. Cheese.
And then everyone else just started calling me Colby Cheese. I was like, yeah, okay, that's a good nickname. We'll go with that. So yeah, that's Colby Cheese.
And how did you get into coding and what are you doing now?
Well, I got into coding originally because I wanted to make some video games in Flash.
We just had an episode about this.
Really?
Yes, about JavaScript games with
Chris Johnson.
Yeah, Chris Johnson.
Sweet, Chris. C++. I watched one of his streams. He does the game challenges stuff. Or whatever.
Yeah, he will actually stream himself coding every now and then.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you're doing now.
I did that this morning. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, you've been doing a bunch of tutorials.
Yes, tutorials. I do YouTube videos. I had a nice little stint of YouTube career.
Yo, Colby's famous.
I knew who Colby was before he joined here. I watched his videos back in 2012.
No, but it's cool. You've been streaming video games for a bit now.
Or you were. You did.
I did. Yes, back in...
In your previous job.
2010 to 2014-ish. Yeah. Something around that range. And then I was like, you know what? It's time to move on. I'm going to learn to code. Again, sort of, but web now. Yeah.
How was that transition going from Flash to web development? Because I did the same thing. I first learned Flash, ActionScript, and then into like web dev stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think ActionScript is very similar to Java, if anyone's in Java.
It's object oriented.
Yeah, it's a lot of like, you know, static typing and things like that. But it's interesting because with Flash, you pretty much have all the tools right there in front of you in one place. Web development is a lot more complicated because there's so much crap out there, libraries and like build tools and just...
So many tools, you say.
Yeah. Whoa, look out.
Build tools.
He's on fire.
Let's talk about some of those tools.
Let's talk about
those tools being unit testing tools.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like, when I first started learning to code, I was doing the whole Ruby because I was like, oh, I got to learn Ruby. That's what everyone was telling me in the tutorials. And that community is all like test-driven development.
Yes.
But I could never learn testing.
So much more organized than JavaScript.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But it was confusing. Like, no one was really teaching testing in a way that made sense to me. I didn't get it. Like, it wasn't even until actually recently that I even figured out how to do any testing myself at all. Because it was just like, it seemed really arcane. I was like, oh, yeah, I want to do it, but...
But why did you decide to learn about testing? When did you realize that it was important?
Like a year ago? But I never did until, like, I don't know. I just thought it would be too difficult to learn.
I feel like people have this ubiquitous idea that JavaScript testing is important to do. But why? Like, where does it relate? Like, where do you cross that phase of I'm writing a lot of JavaScript to I need to write tests for all my JavaScript?
You know what's interesting is, like, you really start to see why you need tests when you have a big project that doesn't have tests. And every time you make a change, it breaks. So you spend more time fixing code than writing new things.
I have no idea how that feels. No idea at all.
You can see that Chris Donarash is really enjoying his life right now.
Yeah.
He's having a good time.
Cry.
Right. Like, our project is really big right now. It's like, recent conversation is, oh, we don't really want to push any new code. We just need to, like, manually test everything individually every single time any change is made. Oh, like, gosh. How about we write some tests, guys?
So this is a really organized way of writing tests. You're not just console logging all over the place.
Yes, exactly. So that's like debugging, right? Console logging is for debugging. Tests.
Debugging.
Yeah. Duh. Bugging. No, I mean, unit tests are what we're... okay. This is great.
This is a good moment.
This
sorry.
Is nice. Okay. I like. That's funny.
Unit tests are not for debugging.
Unit tests, you write this so you can have this automated solution to make sure the code that you're writing is working properly and that whenever you make a new change... something that is somewhere else in your application didn't just completely break, which happens a lot, and you just don't know it until later, and they're like, oh, there's a code in production. Yeah. All right,
especially
put out the
with
fire.
The patterns of JavaScript we're using today, where things broke up into modules that are interrelated, and you don't know where your variables are going all the time.
And especially with a big project, when you have to refactor code all the time, if you don't know when your code breaks, because you'll never know. If you have like a 10,000-plus line code base.
Yep.
Yes.
I say 10,000, but that's a very, very small number.
That's just also a random number.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we have so many lines of code, and...
Remember, Chris Donarash here works on the Bluemix team.
Oh, right, yeah, sorry.
We're on the Bluemix engineering team. We're all cloud platform here.
Right.
So these are large-scale applications.
Right.
This is IBM-scale applications.
Right, and so, like, you change one thing, you never know how many other things might be affected by it. And testing solves that issue for you because you run this unit test, you change something, your entire suite runs, and then if you wrote them well, then you would know if you broke something or not.
Yeah.
So let's talk about writing tests. Maybe what tools you use, like which frameworks, there's testing frameworks, right? Is that the right word?
Yeah. So let me talk about some of the stuff that hopefully can demystify and make a little bit more sense. That would have helped me if I had known this. Because when you first start looking up testing, like, you hear all these terms, and you're like, what the heck? You know, you hear things like, oh, you got to know, like, mocks, fakes, spies, stubs, and then, you know, you got, like, all these test runners and blah, blah, blah. But let's just kind of start with from scratch. Let's say you want to write some stuff in JavaScript right now. You need a test framework to be able to run the test. So you're going to use something like Mocha, okay? So I'm just going to start basic here. I'm not going to go into, like, the bajillion options. Right now, as far as I'm aware, Mocha is like the popular one, okay?
What's, like, the second most popular one?
Mocha.
Karma.
Karma.
Okay.
So Karma is a test runner.
Yes.
Versus a test framework. There's some small subtleties to this. Mocha kind of encompasses a bunch of things. Karma can run Mocha, right? And so if you're running a client-side testing, you probably would use Karma to run Mocha. Jasmine or
so like Phantom is something that
So I was gonna talk about that,
but
as a distinction between unit tests. So you have like unit tests,
yes,
which is where you take a single piece of your code. Just think of like a function and test that function does exactly what you think it should be doing, and then you have something which is called like end to end testing, which is where you have to actually spin up an entire browser. Something
that's
like you
the
probably
headless browser.
Yeah,
thing.
If you've heard of Phantom.js, Selenium, things like that, where it actually you give it a URL as if it was the user, and it has to go through the entire flow to get to the action that you want. Versus unit test is you literally just call the function that you want to test and make sure.
Okay, so you don't have to create an entire browser and then test the whole page. You're just testing small functions of code that you're writing bit by bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so Phantom was made because people used to use this thing called Selenium. Which would literally spin up an entire browser process and then literally move the mouse and do these clicks. Yeah. And it's very, very precise, very cohesive, but it's very slow. And very expensive. And so Phantom.js is a headless browser, which means it doesn't load up all these things that a normal browser would do. So it doesn't have all these things like the window object, the document object. You have to inject those manually.
Oh, that's what headless means.
Yes.
Yeah.
I see now. I'm still learning so many things.
Yay.
And because it doesn't do all these things, you can run it in your console, in your terminal, and it's super fast, and you can have some of the same testing you could have had in Selenium. Not all the same things, but some of the same things can be done in Phantom.js.
So with Phantom, I know that's used for visual regression testing, that a lot of people that are writing a lot of visual code, like SAS code, they will do that. They spin up a page, and there's another tool that you use on top of it, and it creates visual diffs. for your whole page. So like it shows where things have moved.
Yeah, if you need to do some like pixel perfect stuff, but that's difficult because nowadays it's all responsive design.
Yeah.
You know, like that tool has a way to like take a screenshot if there's an error.
Right.
Exactly. You know, and then you can look at it and see what's wrong. But
yeah.
I think it's all overkill for most projects.
I think so.
Yeah.
So unit testing, not overkill.
Yeah. Spinning back to Mocha.
But now that we know the distinction, right?
Yes, that's an important distinction to make.
So if you just want to get started testing, you just want to write one test, you're gonna wanna import in Mocha. And Mocha is something you can use in your project. You run it in it runs a node, so you'd run it from your command line. You can run Mocha, right?
Yep.
If you set it up, and then it'll look and do all the tests. So it gives you things as well, like being able to write describe. So you would say describe in your code. Maybe describe this set of functionality or scenario.
And that's what you see in your terminal when you're running the test. You see your describe statement.
Yep. So it's like this should do something.
Mm-hmm.
And then
underneath,
know what you're looking for.
And then underneath the describe, you'll have like it, and then you give it a description, and then you do your code.
Yep.
Okay, so that's what Mocha does. Is it gives you that vocabulary and that functionality. And then within Mocha, people use various libraries, usually Chai, which is what you call like an assertion library or an exception library. Basically, it gives you like vocabulary within your code to say something like expect my variable 2.equal true.
So that does not come with Mocha. You have to use Chai on top of Mocha for
Mocha,
the expect statements?
Mocha, I think,
statements?
Has a basic assert library by itself, but most people use Mocha and Chai
It's not as powerful on its own?
Right.
So Chai gives you the... It's just like more readable in human form. It makes sense in like a testing way, and then I think the way it spits out the error, if you get it, is easier to understand by using these assertions because they hold on to that a certain way. I believe that's another reason, but it's just easy to read because you say things like .2.equal and then things like that.
Cool.
And then for like the more complicated stuff, you probably hear the terms where you hear the things like stubs, mocks, fakes, spies, all this stuff.
No,
you have to
I
use.
Don't know what these terms.
Exactly. Well,
it's a term that's used all the time. And I
stubs,
found
mocks,
when I was first,
fakes, spies.
Yeah, when I was first trying to find out what is a mock, what is a spy. It was so hard to find
it's
a definition.
Confusing. It's confusing.
Like they just kept using the same word over and over again.
Okay, let's
and I was like,
what are the definitions?
Help.
Well, I just wanted to bring up those words because those are the confusing words that stopped me from ever even learning to test in the beginning with. You don't necessarily need all that. Like you can technically just write a test where you say, okay, so like let's start with without going into that stuff. Let me just explain like a basic test, right? Tests are usually going to have a few parts. You want to have like maybe like a setup and then your setup test and then you know maybe a teardown. And basically all that means is you have your beginning state, you know, like maybe my variable equals 1, and then you run my variable, you know, add 2, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you're testing add.
Yeah, so it's like
and then expect, you would use expect.
Which is the answer.
Expect
the value
2 equal,
expect.
You know, the next. Yeah, so that's like a basic test. So you don't have to know all these other vocabulary to do basic tests. Only reason you need all these other words, okay. Let's think the most basic example. You're going to hear the word like spy, okay? So this is something that is probably like a more common one because if you need to test that a callback has been called, then you would use something like a spy. You would spy on a function to know that a callback has been
triggered.
Yeah.
So it's like you peek into the function itself, the actual function.
Okay.
And you know when something actually happens.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like opening the scope of that function up inside the test.
Yes.
And reading like a certain trigger.
Yeah, so you can kind of write this, like you probably have to do this a lot of times in your test. You have to like test that a function has been called with a certain parameter, or you have to test that a click happened 3 times, or you know, something like that. So this happens a lot within testing. So there's a little library called Sinon or Sinon. I don't know how you say it.
I have no idea.
I looked it up on Wiki.
That
sounds
so wrong.
They said there's like a Japanese term, and it's supposed to be Sinon. I don't know.
Okay.
Something from I don't know. It sounded cool because it sounded
we'll
all anime.
The show notes.
So I was like, that's cool. So Sinon or Sinon.
So would this be like if I'm testing that a click handler was like called, you would use spy? Is that what you're saying?
So, so let me give you, I wrote a little example of one. So basically, let me look for it. Okay, so you can write a spy yourself, but you use a library like Sinon because it makes it easier. So,
okay, got it.
So if you were going to test if something was clicked, you'd have to write the actual callback. So you'd have to say like vote equals entry. Let's say we're like testing for something was voted. Then you have to say like this variable now equals this other variable. And then later you have to test to see if that variable got changed. But with Cnon, you would just say callback equals cnon.spy, and then later you would say expect callback dot called once equals true.
Okay. See? So it's another vocabulary set for testing like your functions more deeply.
And then you can also say things like called with args, bracket zero or whatever, to see which argument it was called with. So it just makes all that stuff easier when you need to look into a function and see what happened.
Okay. Yeah, so for me, I have more to do with Jasmine and Jasmine spies than Mocha and Chai and Cnon. I guess I came from the Angular world where we use Jasmine. And React also uses Jasmine and Jest.
I hear these so interchangeably that I don't even know what the difference is.
So really. Mocha was really used heavily in the Node world. And then different spectrums of the JavaScript world use different things. They're all more or less the same thing. They have just different, slightly different vocabulary, mostly the same, and a slightly different way of doing things. Angular uses Jasmine. React and Facebook uses something called Jest, which is a layer on top of Jasmine. And then Node uses Mocha. A lot of different things use Mocha as their base tool. But with Jasmine, so just to kind of reiterate what Colby's saying, the spy, let's use, look at a function, see what parameters it has, see how time it was invoked, see what if it returns something, not what it returned per se, if it returns something, and then something else too. But like it's just like
you get more info.
You get a little more info. It's not the full thing. It's when you're testing something else, right? But you need to know if
so. It's like testing relationships.
Yeah. So when you build a test component versus one small module or one small atom, I guess. Say you're testing a method that does something else and uses something else, and you just need to know that in one of its requirements was actually called and run, you spy on it.
Okay, that terminology makes sense to me, the components versus atoms.
But
there were other words.
Yes, so now imagine yourself trying to test a method that like adds some stuff or deletes something from a database. You don't want that to happen, right? You're going to call the function to test that it works, but you don't want to actually delete something from the database, right? So what do? You stub out that functionality of the code temporarily. So this is where I would say there's in test they have the terminology of like maybe a setup and then a teardown afterwards. So in general you would set up a stub for the section of code that calls the database. So you would do like so Cnon actually allows this too. You can do like cnon.stub and then the name of the method that it calls, and then you would do all your functionality. Test everything out, and then at the end you would restore the functionality with like cnon.restore.
Okay. So yeah, I've heard of stubbing things out.
Yeah, it's like when you have a basic example is like say, hey, I want I have a really complicated method called addition. And
fire the nukes. Fire the nukes. You have a method called fire the nukes. Let's use a real world example. Come on now. I know it's hard. Math is hard, but. Wow. Chris T, we found his limit today. We found the limit
Chris
of
your complicated function.
Okay. Oh, really complicated function named fire the nukes. We can make a stub called fire the nukes inside of our test suite and say return.
We're going to stub out a nuke.
Yeah. Return, instead of firing the nukes.
Returns a string called fire the nukes. And so it doesn't have any of the logic, but just returns something so that my testing suite can.
Yeah, maybe it'll say, yes, we fired the nukes. Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, instead of actually firing the nukes.
Yeah.
I can see how that could be an issue.
Yeah, it might just be an issue. We just wanted to test that it worked. It did.
I like these extreme examples. They're great.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so that's stubbing. We went through spying, stubbing. Wow, this is like very much becoming a war conversation very quickly.
I mean, unit testing is a battle.
But
I guess the last word is mock. That's really important.
Yeah. Mocks. I mean, that kind of gets used with stubbing sometimes.
Yeah, so mocking is just like stubbing. Mocking is just kind of verifying that your stub returns something that you thought would be accurate. So say we have that fire the nukes stub, all right? A mock would say, fire the nukes, I expect fire the nukes to return, yes, I fired the nukes.
Okay, so it's like Cold War versus a real war. Stubbing is like, practicing the firing of the nukes, faking that out. Whereas spying, I don't know, I think of Cold War and spying. That kind of goes together. Oh, where you're just getting a response. You're looking for text response there. You're not actually doing anything.
You're letting it do its thing, and you're just keeping track of what happened. Yeah. That's a spying.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not
stopping it from doing anything. You're just keeping track. You're just doing what Facebook does whenever you log in and do things.
Yeah, you're doing a little bit of spying.
Yeah. And so Mox is saying, oh, yes, the intel we got back is correct.
Yes, exactly.
You can mock them with it.
Yeah.
You could also mock
I suppose
mock
if you wanted to mock them later.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, okay. Oh, man. Fun times.
Fun times.
Okay, goodness. So those were some good words to know. That's like testing more advanced things.
Potentially.
It is more advanced, but it's also required for basically, like, stubbing will come into play quite
yeah,
often.
Yeah, that one I could see. Spying, I think, is...
What, especially when you deal with...
More detailed.
When you deal with methods that do, like, AJAX requests, you're like, oh, wait, I need to stub out this method, and then mock its response is accurate.
Right, so you give it like a made-up data object rather than letting it call the server and waiting for the response.
Yeah, but you should expect a mocked result, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
So...
In your app in the beginning, you won't use stub and mock, but as you progress down the complexity, your testing will also become more and more complex.
Cool. It becomes more of a battle.
More of a battle.
So I was going to say, like, testing is actually very simple. What is difficult is testing difficult code.
Right.
Ah, I see. So it's easiest when you're writing tests as you write your code.
So ideally, we have this thing called test-driven development or behavior-driven development, where you write your tests first and then write the code to make your test pass.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, you write all these tests. They all fail, obviously, because you have no code. Mm-hmm. And then you keep writing code to make the test pass.
Yeah.
And that way, you have full code coverage. And
it's addicting, actually. If you get
gamifying.
To doing it.
It's, like
it's really fun.
It really is gamifying it. Yeah. It's wonderful.
It's great.
It's wonderful. And then it forces you to write clean code.
Right.
Honestly. Because if you try and go and test this application that has like 100 lines of code for one function and does like 20 different things, that's very difficult to do because you're probably going to be mocking a lot of stuff out. Whereas if you just had a function that does one thing and you know exactly what to give it and what it what it gives you back, it's a lot easier to test.
You have to write good tests then.
Yes. You also write good tests.
What is your advice for writing good tests?
Well, I mean, if you're just starting with a project from new, there's something we call like the happy path.
Happy path.
You haven't heard of that?
Tell me more.
No, this is new to me.
The idea is like, okay, if you have an existing application, no tests, you can't like give it full code coverage right away. The idea is to start at least with the happy path being like the most common thing. Like if you like, so for like in our case, a blue mixed cloud, maybe you want to create a virtual server. So the happy path is user logs in, just gives standard information, does everything correctly, and everything works. Maybe like an unhappy path would be the edge cases, right? You do the edge cases later, but you want to focus on the important stuff first, the very mission critical first. And then as you increase your code coverage, you start working on the more complicated potential edge cases. They tried to hack you, so you need to like put in like checks for this or, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Hopefully that wasn't too complicated.
Security checks.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay, so we're coming up to our post 20-minute mark, which we already passed, actually, which is fine.
Okay,
this was great.
One more question.
Yes, go ahead.
I wanted to ask, if somebody wanted to get started with testing, do you have any resources that you'd
That was my question.
To? Yes! We're still on the same page now.
Yep.
We got episode 16.
Yeah.
Finally got it down.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Wow. So that's a difficult one to ask because it's like, are you just testing basic code? Or are you doing some React stuff? I actually just went through an amazing test-driven development tutorial that teaches you React, Redux, Immutable.js, and testing all in one.
I saw that.
Yeah.
It's great. That was a great resource.
What is that?
I found the link. It's a very ugly link.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be hard to say on the air. You can probably Google it, or
we'll put it in the
show notes.
Okay, do you know who's like putting this course out?
It's not a course.
It's literally like a long blog post. It could have been an ebook.
It could have been.
It took me like a week to get through because I went through it like
step by step.
Yeah, and I changed the code to React 14. Yeah. And like I did, and I used a new framework called Enzyme, which it doesn't use, which I don't have time to get into, which is really awesome, but maybe you can Google it if you care.
we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I would love to talk more about that. I can talk for a long time, but anyways, we have, you know, time.
Yeah.
Time and
this is a great intro, definitely, to unit testing. I learned a lot, for sure.
Sweet.
So that's your one resource of note?
I would say that's my one resource. If you want to, actually, go to xenon.js.org and just click on their documentation, and then it'll have all of those vocabulary words, and then it'll tell you what is a test spy, when to use spies, when to not use spies. It literally says that in the doc. It's like one of the best docs, xenon.js. .org.
Sinonjs.org. And we'll have all this in our show notes as well.
Yeah, you can literally just go there and like look at stub. What are stubs? When to use? When to not use? It's really cool.
Good documentation makes life so nice.
I know.
Sweet. So thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been great.
Thanks.
Any last words?
Stay cool, bros.
No, I don't know. I made that one up.
We can cut now.